Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. I said in a talk I did recently that I would read something that a Christian bishop said on the subject of not being vengeful. And it's important to understand that deeply spiritual people, deeply religious people in any tradition, you'll basically get that point, that there's no future spiritually in vindictiveness, and that one only hurts oneself by being that way. One mostly hurts oneself. One does hurt others too. One can hurt others too, but mostly hurts oneself. I read again something that their master wrote on this. She's in speaking about human, about the tendency that we have to mistake vengefulness for justice. She says, there's a great distance between the justice of an eye for an eye and the Quaker ideal of sinners being locked up in solitude so as to have time to reflect and repent. The difference between, in other words, the difference between punishment and vengefulness and, you know, the necessity sometimes of separating people who are behaving very badly and hurting themselves and others from the rest of society so that they can change, give them an opportunity to change and stop doing what they're doing, protect other people from them at the same time. She says, it may take many years before people realize that since they are not the eternal, they have no right whatsoever to exact vengeance. Vengeance masquerades as, quote, punishment. They have no right to exact this on other people in order to relieve their own frustrations. Anyway, so that's something our master said on the subject, and this is from a book called Papillon, which was made into a movie with starring Steve McQueen that some of you have seen, Dustin Hoffman. But it's a very interesting book, and it was written by a man who was himself in his youth a career criminal, but he wasn't a murderer. And he got convicted framed for murder in France and deported to French Guiana. This was in 1931, where they shipped out their criminals, their serious criminals. And the book is mostly a story of his escapes and then his punishments, his attempt to escape and then his punishments. The punishments he was punished for trying to escape. And this is an amazing story, and I gather that it's true. But on his first escape, that was where he basically escaped for over a year, around a year, before he was caught and sent back to French Guiana. He met the Bishop of Curaçao, which is an island off of Venezuela. That island was in Dutch control at the time. I don't know if it is or still or not, but the bishop came to meet him and talk with him. what the bishop said to him. Sometimes God wills for one of his children to experience human wickedness so that he will emerge stronger and nobler than ever. Don't you see, my son, that if you hadn't had this Calvary to climb, all the suffering and difficulty, Calvary to climb, Calvary was the hill where Jesus was crucified, and if you remember, and they made him carry his cross up the hill, which is a very heavy, you know, wooden structure, made him carry it up the hill. Flogging him along the way, I gather. So it means if you hadn't had to endure this terrible suffering, you know. If you had not, don't you see, my son, that if you hadn't had this Calvary to climb, you would never have been able to raise yourself so near to God's truth. At this point in his travels, he'd met Papillon, had met people who were truly had genuine Christian charity. They didn't care if he was an escaped criminal. They only wanted to give him a place of refuge, and they trusted him. He couldn't believe, above all else, he couldn't believe the way he and his fellow escapees were trusted by these people in Curaçao. Anyway, the bishop goes on to say, let me put it another way. The men, the system, the cogs of the machine that ground you down, the evil men who framed you and tortured you, have rendered you the greatest service possible. They brought forth a new man superior to the first. And if today you recognize honor, goodness, and charity, and realize the energy you will need to surmount the obstacles and become someone superior, you owe it to them. By superior, it means someone who's genuinely spiritual. You know, it doesn't mean someone better than other people. You know, your idea of vengeance, of punishing everybody according to the injury inflicted on you, goes against the grain of your character. That this is if you read this book, this is a real feature of this particular man, Papillon. It's what got him into so much trouble, really, is that his insistence that anyone who has wronged him must be punished, as he himself is punished by others. You know, he didn't make the connection that other people are just doing to him what he does to others. But anyway, the bishop understands both the potential nobility of this man's character and also his delusion. So he's kind of addressing both here. He says, your idea of vengeance, of punishing everybody according to the injury inflicted on you, goes against the grain of your character. You must be a saver of men and not live in order to do evil. He's saying that basically attempting to set things right through vengeance is evil, as it is. Even though you think the evil is justified, God was generous to you. He told you, help yourself and I'll help you. He helped you in so many ways. He even allowed you to save other men and lead them to freedom. But listen to this now. But most important, don't make so much of your own sins. There are many people in higher positions who are guilty of much worse. Only they haven't experienced the weight of man's idea of justice. Man's idea of justice. And therefore have missed the opportunity to rise above it as you did. Man's idea of justice. And at this point, you know, the man, you know, Papillon is a, that's how he was called. It's a butterfly. He had a butterfly tattooed on his chest. Not his real name. His real name's Henri Charrier. Charrier. Look at Charrier. Yeah, Charrier. Anyway. At this point, he was kind of like really kind of teetering on the. He could have gone either way. He could go towards real genuine conversion at this point because he was really, truly recognizing the goodness in other people and the generosity and the charity and the kindness in others. And of course, if you can recognize it in others, you can begin to see it in yourself. And you really, in order to for there to be a genuine conversion, we have to find the Buddha nature within ourselves. Unfortunately, they wouldn't allow him to stay in Curacao or in Trinidad, where he'd gone before there. They wouldn't allow him to stay there, and they shipped him on, and he ended up in Colombia, and the Colombians returned him to the French, where they really put him through it. Then he escaped again. You know, ended up eventually he escaped again years later, and this time he successfully made it to Venezuela, where the Venezuelans put him in what was really just a total hell of a camp for a while, until he was eventually granted basically asylum in Venezuela and became a Venezuelan citizen. Opened a restaurant in Caracas, Frenchman. And he always aspired to go straight, to kind of prove to himself, actually, that he could live among other people as an ordinary, useful member of society. And I think in the end, he must have done that. But in his youth, he was a safe cracker. But he got framed for murder. And you can see, if you read the book, and you can see the kind of person he is, see, he's a very highly intelligent, very magnetic individual, a natural leader of other people. He's also a real troublemaker and a very dangerous person. And you can see why eventually someone would frame him for murder just to get him out of their hair. He never kind of puts the two together, that basically that his own behavior eventually got him in this situation. But he truly ended up in the hells, where other people were being the demons tormenting him. And he did end up in the prison. He did end up killing a man. He was himself a very dangerous person. So one of the, you know, if you ever read the book or see the movie, you know, you kind of read between the lines a bit, you'll see, you know, we tend to get ourselves in these situations most of the time. But he had no reluctance to inflict on other people the punishment that he resented being inflicted on himself. And that's a real block to conversion. Anyway, I just wanted to show that there are people in other religions besides Buddhism who do get that it is utterly futile to mistake, you know, vengeance for justice, and to place their faith in something as delusory as punishment. You can't. And he also gives, and I thought his advice was very good about really, the way a Buddhist would put it is basically, you know, these people who have you know, been so cruel to you, you know, you need to bow and see the Buddha in them. If you can see the Buddha in them, you can see the Buddha in yourself. And in effect, he gives them that advice, really, in other words. But he tries to help him to see the people that he so resents and so wants to get vengeance on, to see them in a positive way. It was very hard for him. Eventually he did, in the beginning of the book, he explains that eventually he did give up the idea of vengeance. I think it had to wait till his old age, maybe, before he did that. But while he was a young man undergoing all these torments and these hellish situations, he was sustaining himself by planning to go back to France and kill the people who framed him and kill the prosecutor who put him in prison. And if he could get at the jury, he'd probably do that too. So you can see why other people were concerned about him. A highly intelligent and at least in that, a person who, like so many people, really believed that, you know, that when your honor has been violated by another person. First of all, that your honor can be violated or compromised by another person, and that you have to set it right. You have to set it right. And it's kind of a delusory morality. You have to set things right. Nowadays, of course, they put a kind of a peculiar coding of psychology and everything and give it a new word. And nowadays, people talk about you can't get closure until you have seen the people who hurt you be punished. And that, of course, isn't... what do they mean by closure? That isn't closure of anything. By wishing ill upon another and by taking satisfaction in another's demise, we only hurt ourselves. We really hurt ourselves. And this is the thing that a genuinely religious person really sees, that any idea of justice that requires you to hurt yourself to accomplish it is simply too costly. It's too costly. I've told the story many times when I was walking with our master in the cloister when I was a young monk and we were alone, and I'd been having a hard time, and she'd been very patient with me. And I just thanked her. In a moment of temporary sanity, I took the opportunity to thank her for her kindness. And Reverend Master, she didn't stop. She didn't look at me. She didn't stop. She just simply said, "How could I hurt that which is part of myself?" And she just kept on walking. And that's what we have. That's the understanding we have to come to, that level of understanding. That's when you really give up wanting to get back at others for the wrongs they've done. Real or imagined, doesn't matter. How could I hurt that which is part of myself? The bishop gave him very good advice. At the end, really, and you could put it in other words, he could have said, you know, "My son, you need to forgive yourself for your own, what you think of as your sins. You need to forgive yourself." Because, and this is another teaching that Reverend Master always emphasized, and it really is true, that we do to others, or we wish to do to others, as we do to ourselves. So if we are having trouble being generous to ourselves, then we have trouble being generous to others. If we have trouble being forgiving to ourselves, we have trouble being forgiving to others. If we have trouble being patient with ourselves, we have trouble being patient with others. If we hate part of ourselves, we hate that when we see it and reflected in the actions and lives of others. And this is simply a law. This is the way it works. The world is a mirror. We look in that mirror and we see a reflection of ourselves. And when we find our own Buddha nature and hold fast to it, then we see the Buddha nature of others. And we see that in the natural world, in the actions of others, in the unfolding of events, in whatever way they unfold, everything is working for our good. And of course, when he talks about these people who had mistreated this man, when he talks about that they have done him a great service, he's actually talking about that. he's really saying, you know, everything that happens has been for your good. Like, wake up. Wake up. You know, let go of the holding on to the pain and the holding on to the resentment and awaken to the real truth of the way the world works. None of this, of course, means that we need to go seeking out punishment and suffering so that we can then be grateful for it. I hope that's clear to everyone. People make that mistake, you know. I'm supposed to be grateful for suffering, so I have to bring more suffering down on myself so that then I can be grateful for it. It doesn't, you know, Rinzai Massey say you don't need to raise a bump in order to itch. You know, we got enough bumps as it is without having to deliberately create one. You know, we have enough things that aggravate us and test us without having to, you know, create testing situations and seek out, you know, suffering. Suffering is the inevitable consequence of non-perceptual action, and we've all got enough of it to be getting on with. And every day, every situation that arises is another opportunity to bow and another opportunity to learn, to be taught by life, to be taught by others. There's a Buddha who teaches us what to do through an example that we wish to emulate. There's also the Buddhas that teach us what to avoid. They're both Buddhas. Buddha, Siddhartha, Sangha.